the Good Glow Health, a podcast that will help us understand our health better. I'll talk to experts who will demystify topics like sleep, fertility, nutrition, gut health, and much more, as we take steps to become the healthiest version of ourselves. Since being diagnosed with cancer in my 30s, I made it my priority to educate myself on my health. I discovered creating healthy habits and investing in yourself can lead to wonderful things. I'm so proud to say this podcast is sponsored by Emma. Emma mattresses are created by an in-house team of sleep experts who use only the best foams and the latest foam technologies. The Emma products are designed with you in mind and sure to have you waking up feeling energetic and refreshed. For a limited time, listeners of the Good Glow Health podcast can save a massive 42% on orders placed through emma-mattress.ie/podcast. You can find this link in this episode's description. Dr. Nikki Ralph is my guest on the Good Glow Health today. We talk about the importance of looking after your skin and what skin routine we should be in. We speak about clear, glowy skin, the importance of double cleansing and not scrubbing your skin raw. We also speak about wearing SPF, mole mapping, fillers and Botox, and Dr. Nikki answers some of your Instagram questions. Dr. Nikki Ralph, consultant dermatologist, welcome to the Good Glow Health.
Thanks very much for having me.
I'm so thrilled. I've been dying for this conversation. I'm so interested in skin health. And I was reading on your website that people who come to see you may be living with acne, rosacea, skin cancer, eczema, hair loss, or just looking for cosmetic dermatology. So you're seeing a whole wide range of people.
Yeah, so basically, I'm based at the Institute of Dermatologists in Bullsbridge, and we started last year, actually. It was founded by myself and my colleague in July 2019, and there are now 7 dermatologists within our building and 2 plastic surgeons. So we're all specialist registered consultant dermatologists or plastic surgeons. So it really means that if you're being referred in by your GP or another consultant, that you are going to be seen by somebody who's highly trained, but also so we can direct your referral letter to the person who has maybe a special interest in that chosen area. Mm. Now, all of us do specialise in medical dermatology, some of us more so in surgical dermatology, and then obviously 2 plastic surgeons, and then the cosmetic side as well. So it really depends on what the person's being referred in, but they will get the kind of the best attention because you'll be referred on to the specific person.
And have you always been interested in skin health, and what do you specialise in then?
So I'm a medical dermatologist, but yeah, I would also do a lot of surgery. So 50% of my daily work, really, whether it's seeing patients with skin cancer, and then I operate twice a week as well. So that would be my biggest area, but mainly medical dermatology. So as mm-hmm. you already said, acne, psoriasis, eczema, hair loss, rosacea, which is really common in Ireland as well. So they would be the commonest things that we see every day. And then some of the other like autoimmune diseases like lupus or blistering disorders and things like that. But they would be less common.
Because mm-hmm. I put it out on Instagram last night, actually asking people if they had any questions. And as I said before we came on air, I got hundreds of questions. And do you think that maybe people in Ireland, are we getting better at looking after our skin, but do a lot of us suffer in silence?
Yeah, I mean, there are certain conditions that are, you know, they might be in areas, and you've probably seen from programs like on the television, where people suddenly, they haven't seen a doctor in 20 years, and then suddenly they go on television to show their skin condition. There are plenty of people who suffer some skin conditions, such as hidradenitis suppurativa, which is common enough. Like, we think it affects at least 1-2% of the Irish population, possibly more. But the reason we don't know is because people present late. So the average time to diagnosis from, you know, sitting at home thinking about it to getting to a consultant dermatologist is actually 7 years. So that's an awful long time to be, as you said, suffering in silence. And that's where people get recurrent boils and abscesses in their body full sites. So under the arms, under the breast, the genital skin. So incredibly painful and massive impact on your quality of life. Mm-hmm. But yeah, patients do suffer absolutely in silence.
Wow. I read an amazing article that you'd written for gloss.ie on just the kind of, it was like 10 steps on how to look after your skin. And I just found it fascinating because I only learned really about double cleansing about 7 years ago. I think as I was getting ready to get married, and you know, the way you
you're
always
doing everything right.
Okay, it's a year to the wedding. Yeah. That's it. And the double cleansing. And I think I was following Caroline Hirons over in the UK, and she's a skin blogger, and she spoke about the importance of the double cleanse and the face cloths. And you speak about that too.
Yeah, I'm a big fan of double cleanse. Most dermatologists would be a big fan of double cleanse. Like, we can all get a little bit lazy, obviously. And I mean, lockdown neither brought out the worst in us or the best of us. Some of us got really lazy and stopped doing our routine, and some of us overdid it. So we definitely saw a fluctuation in people's, particularly their facial skin, whether they were getting acne. Sometimes it was just because they weren't taking their makeup off properly. And for some people, they were overdoing it with products. But the double cleanse is really important because as the day goes on, we all build up oil and the debris from, you know, walking outside and we're sweating and things like that. So you have to take off that top layer. Mm-hmm. And obviously, if you put on sunscreen that morning or you put on a layer of makeup, one cleaning is just not enough. So I would always advise people to use a micellar water first. Okay. To take off the top layer
with a cotton bud or a cotton,
with a cotton, a cotton pad. Cotton, exactly.
Yeah, cotton pad.
And there's so many micellar waters available, as in there for different skin types, you know. So some people are afraid to use products if they have very sensitive skin, which is reasonable, but there are plenty that are suitable for those with super sensitive, you know, eczema prone skin. So I would do that first, and then I would do a cream cleanser. So I'm not a big fan of physical exfoliants where you physically feel those little beads or, you know, what feels like grains of sand on your hand and you're scrubbing at your face. It's too harsh, and what it does is it's over drying your skin, which then makes your own oil glands overproduce oil, and then you get into this vicious cycle of over drying it, and then your own body's response is to make more oil, and then you develop acne spots. Basically, I much prefer a chemical exfoliant, which is a daily use of exfoliation on your skin, which you're gently dabbing at your skin, not rubbing at your skin, because you don't want to break the fine little blood vessels that are in the second layer of your skin, because you'll get that kind of red, you know, mottled appearance to your cheeks and your nose. So it's always a micellar water first, followed by a cream cleanser. And then I also use a chemical exfoliant every day.
Every day?
Every day. Yeah.
Okay. And is that when you're going to bed?
I do it twice a day, actually, morning and evening. So yeah, so you'd introduce it slowly. You can just start with once a day, and you would put water on your cotton pad, so it's not really, really strong. Mm-hmm. You do that for about 2 weeks, and then your skin adapts, and then it's twice a day.
Okay.
So my absolute favorite magic in a bottle is P50 from Biologique Recherche, the French range.
Okay.
So it's as close to magic in a bottle as you can get, basically.
Really? Yes. Great tip. And then are you putting a moisturizer on top of that then?
Yeah, so my morning routine is obviously I would do my exfoliant, and then I would use vitamin C for skin brightening effect, and then sunscreen. So I can't emphasize that enough. So if I was stuck on an island and I could only bring one product, it would have to be sunscreen. And my favorite sunscreen has to be a mineral physical based sunscreen, not a chemical sunscreen, because you want it to contain zinc and titanium dioxide, because basically that's acting like a shield rather than a sponge. So if you can imagine the sun's rays are coming towards your skin, you want to have a shield in front of you to stop the sun from getting into the skin in the first place. You don't want a chemical sunscreen, which is like a sponge, because then the rays have to come into your skin first, be kind of dealt with inside, and then dispersed, essentially. So I'd rather have a shield in front of my face than have it come into my skin at all.
Wow. And just for the people listening, I know this is a podcast and we can't see you.
I'm here gesticulating.
Your skin is beautiful. You're absolutely glowing. You're obviously doing everything right. In terms of then, so the exfoliation, I think that's really, really important, because I think people get these, you know, the supermarket exfoliators, and they do it twice a week, but you're actually just scrubbing your skin raw.
Yeah, and it's, I think people also need to understand that the skin takes time. That's, you know, most of us we're now of this instantaneous generation where we just want to click our fingers and everything happens. That doesn't work for skin. Mm-hmm. So if you're, you know, it takes you on average 21 to 28 days to get a new top layer of skin. So often we go out, we buy a product, we think this is going to be brilliant, going to put it on for 3 or 4 days and expect to wake up and it's a miracle. You have to allow things to settle and take time. And when I'm adding in a product for someone, I add in one product. I don't add in five products at the same time, because you never know if somebody will have a sensitivity, and if they've done five, you know, for a week, all day, every day putting products on, you just don't know which product it is. So you can add in one product at a time, allow your skin to adjust, and then add in the next one. But the most important thing, as we said, is obviously cleansing your skin properly. You can add in all the moisturizers and the serums and things as you go along, but it can take months to, you know, properly get you into a new skincare routine, essentially.
Yeah, and I think that's so important, is to give yourself time, because I suppose I learned that through my treatment for cancer, when all my hair was gone and all I was left with was my skin and my face. And I suppose I was always like a hair person, so my rollers were always in, I was always curling my hair, and when my hair was gone, I had only one thing to concentrate on. And in many ways, it was a great thing to happen for me, because I had turned my attention to my skin. I completely cleaned up my diet. I was really, really hydrated, and I had this really good skincare routine every night, because it was like my self-care. And after 6 months to a year, I started to see an amazing difference in my skin. But that's how long it can take,
exactly,
you know, to see results. But I think the important thing is not to expect results straight away, and also not to give up.
No, it's true. You have to stick with it. Even when I was talking about my chemical exfoliant, the reason it's called P50 is because it takes actually 50 days to balance out your skin pH. So again, that's almost 2 months, you know, when you're using a new product. So as I said, everyone's looking for the quick fix, but there isn't such a thing. So when people say to me, like, you know, I've got acne today, I need it fixed by a special event next week, that's not going to happen, you know. Mm-hmm. We can't do miracles, unfortunately, so it does take time. But as you were saying, when you're going through your treatment as well, you have to be really careful with what you choose to put on your skin. Skin, when you're going through treatment, can become really dry, really sensitive, and even products that you were able to tolerate before, you just can't tolerate them. So the thing that I love about Biologique Research is because it's so natural. It's made up of marine products, also botanicals, and basically very, very intense, but they don't smell beautiful. So you have to be prepared to put up with slightly unusual smells. That's because they don't add any fragrances. There's no parabens. So when you have a beautifully smelling product, the chances are it has a lot of additives to it, and that might not suit everyone, particularly if you've got eczema prone skin or sensitive skin. The other thing about it is, if you are going through treatment, Biologique Research have trained all of their therapists, they combine with cancer wellness. So for patients who would like to treat themselves, to have a nice facial, to be able to relax when everything else is so stressful, you can come in and have a lovely facial knowing that the products are suitable for your skin and that the massage technique is going to relax you. So I think that's really important, because a lot of people feel they can't go for treatments, or they're turned away. And that's a disaster for someone who's already stressed out, and they arrive and then they're told, sorry, you can't have treatment. So if you are undergoing treatment, you certainly can come in and have a relaxing facial.
Yeah, I think because when you're going through treatment, you just feel so isolated. You're like, I can't do this anymore. I can't do this. I can't even go and get a facial. So that's amazing to know that there is an option for people. How often should we be using masks?
So, well, very topical at the moment. So we're all wearing daily masks, as in M-A-S-K. But for a facial mask, which is S-Q-U-E, I would say at the moment, because so many people are suffering with maskne, you would have to do it once a week. I'm actually doing it twice a week, because for 10 to 12 hours a day, I'm behind a mask. And we've seen a massive upsurge in what's now termed maskne. And you're probably, you know, seeing it on the internet, reading it in magazines. We're seeing a lot of our patients who didn't necessarily suffer with acne before lockdown, now actually suffering with what's called maskne. So I have a lot of them using their masks twice a week. Now you have to be very careful with the mask you choose, because a lot of them are designed to dry out your skin. But as we were already talking about, if you dry your skin out too much, the natural thing that occurs is that your own body starts to make more oil to counteract that, and then you end up again producing more spots. So the mask that I use and all of our staff are using at the moment is Masque Vivant, and that's French for living, essentially. And what it is a mask that hydrates your skin but purifies your skin. So you'll see actually a shrinkage in your pore size after you use it. You'll see that excessive oil is gone and your skin feels glowy, not dry. Because I'm sure you've used masks before where you feel that kind of tight sensation, and that's not what anyone wants, because then you know your body's going to produce more oil. So you want to still feel hydrated after you've used it, but you want your skin to be clear. So I'm using it twice a week. But for anyone who's maybe not, you know, a healthcare worker who's not necessarily in the mask, you know, 10 hours a day, but they're still wearing it to go to the shops and things like that, even once a week, I would say.
Because I'm weaving in a lot of the questions that I got asked on Instagram, and one of the main ones was, I'm getting spots because of having to wear a mask for 8 hours a day. And like, my God, it's tough. Like, I find even if I go into a shop after 20 minutes, I'm like exhausted from wearing a mask. So I can't imagine what people are going through having to wear them all day.
Yeah, it's a little bit claustrophobic, to be honest. I mean, I've been doing it for 5 months now. I'm completely used to it. And obviously we're trying to protect ourselves and protect other people. So you have to wear it. You get a lot of friction. So the reason that people are getting maskne is because of the heat and humidity behind it, but also it's friction. So it's a form of what we call acne mechanica, where people who wear helmets, for example, they would get it at the side of where the strap might be. And basically you're kind of, it's a frictional thing on the skin cells, and combined with the extra heat and then oil production. And so you're kind of getting blockage of your pores. So it's really important for people who are developing what we call maskne to do their cleansing. So definitely do their double cleanse every single day, and to use a gentle cream cleanser. And then you can add in some products with salicylic acid, which will just gently kind of keep the pores unblocked, essentially. So if you haven't got that in your routine, you might need to add that into your routine.
Okay. And diet and hydration, how important is it? Like, does it have an impact on your skin?
Well, I suppose, I mean, there's no set amount. Everyone says how many glasses of water, how many liters of water should you drink every day. There's no set amount for skin, because it's kind of self-regulating. Now, some of us will lose more water from our skin than others, and that's called transepidermal water loss, which is basically your water coming out over the top layer of your skin. So if you suffer with eczema, that level of water loss is going to be higher. So it's really important for those patients to moisturize to recreate the barrier, but it's not that they need to drink 10 liters of water. So you just drink as much as you want. I mean, obviously don't leave it to the point of thirst, but you know, drink regularly throughout the day, but there isn't a set, you know, 1 liter or 2 liters. So it's the moisturizing that actually keeps our skin looking well. If you don't moisturize, your skin's going to get dry and then it looks dull. So you kind of, you know yourself, if you stop doing your routine for a while, you just kind of have a dull look and you just need that brightening again. So it's actually moisturizing more so than hydration. But don't get me wrong, a healthy diet is vital for skin. Skin needs protein to heal. And I think when a lot of people change their diet, if they, you know, eliminate a huge food group out of their diet, do a really restrictive diet, they can often notice an outbreak of acne because there's an imbalance in their skin and they can't heal it. So they suddenly start to develop spots, even though they think they're being healthier with their diet. So it's really important to have lean protein. So, you know, whether you're getting it from a vegetable source or whether you're, you know, chicken and fish. And then also to have plenty of fruit and vegetables. So lots of colour in your diet, because all of that's really important. And not to eliminate fat. That's the other thing. Some people just think, you know, fat is the enemy and I'm just going to totally, you know, go on a diet which is fat free. You do have cholesterol rings in your skin. So you do need a certain level of fat in your diet as well. So not excessive, but you do need proper fats in your diet. And whether you're getting that from, as we said, some lean meats or nuts and pulses and things like that. But it is important to have an overall rounded diet, not excessive sweets and carbohydrates and things like that.
Mm-hmm. I think a retinol cream?
Yeah, or, absolutely. Yeah.
Should people be using them, especially as we kind of get a bit older?
Definitely. Yeah. So if you want to stay looking younger for longer, everyone should add a retinol into their nighttime routine. So it's only put on at nighttime. So it's a vitamin A based cream. And what it's working on really is your fine lines and wrinkles. So it keeps your skin looking smoother and you have less fine lines and wrinkles. But the problem is, again, as I said, because we're this instant generation, we all want the quick fix. So we think, you know, more cream, quicker results. That's the wrong thing to do with retinol. So if your listeners out there, less is more when it comes to retinol. So you have to introduce it slowly. So it's literally just a pea-sized amount to the affected areas. So your forehead, cheeks and chin. You certainly don't want to be putting it all around your eyes and in the, you know, the crevice around your nose, because that's thinner skin and you'll start to get peeling skin, red skin, irritated skin. So I would introduce it every 2 to 3 nights to start off with, then up to every, you know, second night. And then finally, it's a nightly cream if possible. But if you can only tolerate it every second night, that's fine. It'll still work just as well. It's just some people have very sensitive skin, so they can't tolerate it every single night.
Right. Interesting what you said about the SPF. And obviously, everyone is talking about the importance of wearing sunscreen. And I think maybe people would get to their 30s and go, well, I haven't used an SPF on my face. Is there any point in me starting now? What would your advice to them be?
Absolutely. It's never too late to start sunscreen. I suppose most of our damage is done by the time we hit 20, to be honest. And, you know, we've all done it and had a sunburn or two or three. But we can't, you know, we can't undo what we did, but we can certainly improve things moving on. So it's the people who leave it till their 50s and 60s and 70s when they develop their first skin cancer to be told, you know, now you need to use a sunscreen. They've done an awful lot more damage because they might have, you know, 5 decades of sun exposure. I use sunscreen every single day, 365 days a year. It doesn't matter if it looks like the dullest day, you will get UV radiation through the clouds. And the only month of the year in Ireland that you can't get UV damage is January. Every other month you can get damage. I think the Irish misconception is because we don't have 30 degrees and sunny like we do, you know, if you go abroad, that if you just because you can't get sunburnt doesn't mean you're not getting sun damage. So it's a cumulative effect over your lifetime. So it's the sun that you know, you're walking to the car, you walk to the shop, you walk to school, whatever it is that you're doing, you're getting UV radiation. It comes through the glass window, so you're getting UVA through your car. So most Irish people are more sun damaged on their right side. So we've got stronger wrinkles on our crow's feet are worse on the right, and we get more skin cancers on the right side because of driving. So it's really important to use a sunscreen. Even as I said, on the dullest day, you're going to get damage. So I would, in the winter time, a minimum of a 30 and above. And then in the summer months, which in Ireland is approximately May to October, is when the UVB is at its strongest, I would use a 50 or at least, you know, at least a 40 and above. Mm-hmm. And reapply it. That's where, unfortunately, there's a lot of false advertising on the bottles. And they say, you know, once daily application. And everyone thinks, okay, I'll just put that on in the morning and I'll be fine. And then later on that evening, they feel that horrible tingling, burning sensation. It's because once a day isn't enough. You've wiped it off. You know, you sweat, you go swimming. It has to be reapplied. So in order for it to be the factor that it says in the bottle, I would say reapply it every 2 to 3 hours.
Okay. I'll get back to that conversation in just a minute. But first, I wanted to tell you a little more about Emma. Made right here in Ireland, the Emma mattress comes with a 10-year guarantee and is delivered for free and straight to your front door. If you're not 100% convinced, you can return it hassle-free for a full refund. Try Europe's most awarded mattress now for 200 risk-free nights and discover the secret to a great night's sleep. The Emma mattress consists of 3 high-quality foams that perfectly adapt to your body to offer you the right amount of support, pressure relief and comfort, while the breathable materials help keep you cool even during the warmest nights. Just the thing you need to wake up feeling energetic and refreshed. Now, back to the conversation. I think mole mapping is something that maybe a lot of people would put off. Like we're really good at getting our smear tests and things like that, but mole mapping seems to be something that it isn't really spoken about that much. So what would your advice to people be around that?
Yeah, so I suppose younger people are much more conscious of that, and we'd certainly see younger people just, you know, ringing up and looking for an appointment because they might either have a concern about it, or maybe somebody in the family had a changing mole and it's just brought it to their attention. Certainly in America, it's almost like standard that people will come on an annual basis and have their moles checked. Mm-hmm. Just like you said, you'd go for your smears regularly here. But it's definitely an important thing to do. And I suppose it depends on your risk factors. So if you're from a family where, you know, you're very fair skinned, somebody may have had melanoma and maybe you've had plenty of sunburns, you did a few sunbeds, things like that, you certainly should get checked. But it's a very straightforward thing to do. I think a lot of people are put off by it because it's a full skin check and they feel embarrassed by it and things like that, but it's done in a very tasteful way. And I'm not going to say to somebody, you know, completely strip off and sit there. I would usually ask somebody to undress down to their underwear, so, you know, for women, bra and pants essentially. And if somebody feels uncomfortable with that, we could leave either the top half on for half of the exam or the bottom half, and then, but it's really important. I mean, it's a doctor who's looking at you. Skin is the largest organ in the body. I'm looking at your skin. I'm mm-hmm. not looking at anything else. And to be honest, I'm using a dermatoscope, which is a little piece of equipment that magnifies up the features of moles. So I'm really focused on one mole at a time. So not to be embarrassed by it. It's really important that you get all your skin checked, because unfortunately you can have moles everywhere and they can change. So if you're covered up partially and you don't want to expose the skin, you might miss one under your arm or under the bra strap, or, you know, places that you can't even see yourself. So it's really important, because again, if you don't have somebody in your life who can check your moles, you need to go to somebody else, like a doctor, to check it, particularly on your back and the backs of your legs where it can't easily be seen, or in your scalp. I mean, often it's actually your hairdresser who might pick up on a mole in your scalp, because you certainly can't see it yourself. And they might say to you, you need to go and have that checked. Or, you know, a physiotherapist working on your back might say, you know, you have a mole that doesn't look quite right in your back, you should go and have that checked.
And aren't those people great? Because my mum actually went, I don't know where she was, but someone said, you need to go and get that checked. And she did. And it turned out to be something. She got it removed and everything was fine. But like, thank God for people like that. And do you have to be referred for mole mapping through your GP?
The standard will be that you would be referred for, you know, other conditions, the medical conditions. But no, if somebody just wants to have their moles checked, they can just self-refer for a full skin check. Yeah,
that's brilliant. And are you seeing kind of an increase in skin cancer at the moment?
Yeah, well, I suppose it's a little bit of a delay in that with lockdown, everyone was afraid to go to their doctor. But then the weather got better. So then everyone started to wear T-shirts and string tops, and someone might point out, you know, you something on your back. But now, just even in the last month, everyone's, you know, getting back to some sort of level of normality. I'm seeing a lot more lesions referred in. But as I said already, 50% of my work is skin cancer related. So I would see an awful lot of lesions every single day. Like that's what I do. But yes, unfortunately, skin cancer is on the increase. You know, we have approximately, you know, 15,000 cases a year in Ireland, and just over 1,000 cases of melanoma. So to reassure people that the majority of skin cancer is very treatable. Mm-hmm. It doesn't spread inside the body. It'll never take a day off your life, but you don't want it to be bleeding and, you know, maybe be in a site where you have to have extensive surgery around the eye, the nose, the mouth. So if you leave it very, very long, the surgery gets bigger. There's a lot of new treatments out there. Sometimes if they're precancerous or very small, we can freeze them off. We can treat them with creams. So there's lots of ways to treat them. It doesn't always mean surgery, because some people put it off because they're afraid of a surgery. And most skin cancer surgery is done under local anaesthetic. So you'll be chatting away to me, listening to the radio while we're doing it. So it's in and out in a few minutes, you know, so it's very straightforward. Whereas obviously with melanoma, unfortunately, that can spread inside and require other treatments. So it's really important that if you have a changing lesion, you need to get it seen. So, you know, straight in, pick up the phone. And all melanomas, a standard of care in Ireland, are seen within 1 to 2 weeks of receiving that referral.
Right. Yeah. And what should we be looking out for then on our body?
So we basically use the alphabet. So there's really, if people are looking for a good website to go to, if they go to the Irish Skin Foundation, they have good leaflets where you can actually see pictures, because, you know, a kind of an image is worth more than words. And I'm here trying to describe it in words. But A, B, C, D and E. So A for asymmetry. So basically, if you were to cut a mole in half, like the way you'd cut an apple in half, it should be symmetrical. So it's like a mirror image of itself. So if you've got one side that has like a big lump coming out of it, or, you know, a black area, and then the other side's lovely and flat, then that's not a symmetrical mole. So asymmetry for A. B is the border. So it should be quite, you know, well-defined border. It shouldn't have a jagged edge. So I often say to patients, like the map of Ireland, it shouldn't be having, you know, that jagged edge. It should be nice and smooth. C is for colour. So it should have one overall uniform colour. Now, everyone's going to be sitting there, you know, when they're listening to this, looking at their moles going, oh my God, I've got a mole with two colours. Don't panic. You know, there are certain moles that they've been that way your whole life, that you might have a darker centre and a paler rim, or the other way round. It's almost like a little fried egg mole. That's absolutely fine. That's the way your mole is. But if you see a change in colour, so if you thought one side was getting darker or pinker, that's obviously a change. You'd get that checked out. D is for diameter. So a mole that's above 6 millimetres is slightly higher risk. Now, if you're born with a mole, and obviously plenty of people are born with moles, or within the first 2 years of life, you develop your what's called congenital moles, they tend to be larger. So they're often a centimetre, but that's the way you've always been made. So that's fine. But if your mole was 4 millimetres and now it's suddenly 8 millimetres, it's, you know, it's evolving, then you need to get it checked out. And then E was added years ago for evolution, because basically any skin lesion that comes and doesn't disappear within 4 weeks, which is like a spot essentially, and it continues to evolve and continues to change, whether it's the asymmetry, the border, the colour change, it should be checked out. Okay. So, and that's specifically to do with moles. So they're essentially, for the majority of people, pigmented lesions or brown lesions.
Right. Yeah. God, so interesting. Well, we talk about Botox and fillers.
We can, yeah, of course.
Okay, great. I get a bit of Botox in my frown line. Dr. Adele Woods does it for me. And I've gotten it twice. And I have to say, I really love it. Mm-hmm. It makes me feel kind of fresher and more awake. So we're seeing people kind of dip their toe into it a little bit in Ireland. And when we spoke on the phone before this podcast, you said, you know, there's the Hollywood Botox versus natural Botox. And Irish people kind of tend to go for the natural Botox. Is that right?
Yeah. So, I mean, anti-wrinkle injections are there to make us essentially feel better about ourselves when we look in the mirror, because sometimes we start to feel tired. You know, you're looking and you see that kind of angry frown and you're like, God, that really does make me look tired. So they're not designed to suddenly change the way you look. It's just that you want, when people look at you, to say, God, you're looking well. You look rested. Have you been away? Those kind of comments. That's what you want. So that means you're looking natural. You're not looking different. So you look like yourself. You just look like an almost slightly better version of yourself, a rested version of yourself. So yeah, we all get with time. I mean, essentially, unfortunately, the skin starts aging from 25 years of age onwards. So that's technically when we should start doing things. So the earlier we start with anti-wrinkle injections, they're like preventative, essentially, because it prevents your wrinkles from getting deeper and deeper. Whereas, I mean, we're changing that in Ireland. Trends are changing, but obviously the Americans are way ahead of us. So they would start at a younger age to prevent the deep kind of crevices that we get across where the makeup just sits in it like a little trough. So I think most people are kind of have been starting in their 30s, but ideally it's actually your late 20s that you want to be starting in. But yeah, it definitely gives you a fresher look. It can get rid of what makes some people look really angry. And often that's genetic and familial, where you get these really strong frown lines. We call them your 11s, because some people have this like number 11, like two lines. And some people just have a single line. Everyone's different. And then again, when you make that kind of surprise look, some people's wrinkles are very deep across the horizontal wrinkles. So you obviously inject in that area too. And some people are just bothered by their crow's feet. And again, you can look a lot fresher. It really depends. Obviously, some people smile with their eyes and they don't like to have anything that's changes that. And if you do obviously get some anti-wrinkle injections around the eyes, you will lose the ability to smile with your eyes. So often people introduce it slowly. So they start with, as you said, with maybe your frown lines, moving on. And then as you get older, the crow's feet unfortunately get deeper. And then maybe you want to put some in there as well.
And then fillers, I think for me personally, like, I don't know that much about fillers. And it would seem like scarier to me to get fillers rather than Botox. Do you find that?
Yeah, I think most people would be the same. I suppose with the anti-wrinkle injections, it's temporary. So the average, they last for about 3 to 4 months. So even if you didn't like it, it's just going to go back to the way it was. You know, it'll fade over time. When you're putting in filler, you definitely get a more immediate response, because obviously when you're walking out of the clinic, you can see straight away that you've had something done, which is great, because obviously some people want to see that immediate effect. But again, it depends on the type of high hyaluronic acid you're using. So some people do it the natural way, where it builds your own kind of collagen. It's almost like a scaffolding for your skin again, because unfortunately, as we age, everything goes south. So we start off with nice plump cheeks and a nice tight jawline, and then everything starts to sag a little bit as we get older. So what you're trying to do is give people back that scaffolding for their skin. Now, once it's in safe hands and it's done with somebody who's highly trained, there shouldn't be any reason not to do it if that's what you want. But there are other ways to get that kind of plumper skin with new modern technology without having to use filler. So there are more non-invasive ways if people want to do a gentler approach. There's platelet rich plasma, which is I suppose it's referred to as the vampire facial. So we use that actually primarily. We use that for hair loss in our clinic. It's really, really good for hair loss for both men and women. But it's brilliant for facial rejuvenation. It's really fabulous for the fine lines and wrinkles that you get around the eyes. You know, that crepey skin that we all kind of get under our eyes. It can be used in lips for hydration, so that you don't have to put your lip balm on as much. Even when it's done around the eyes, it can stimulate eyelash growth and eyebrow growth. So the thing that people like about that is it's natural. So it's themselves, because all you're doing is taking a bottle of blood. It's a bit like you're going for a cholesterol test. It's a single bottle of blood. It's spun down in a machine called a centrifuge. And then we take out the stem cells, essentially, which we then inject with a very tiny, tiny needle into the face or into the scalp, whether it's for rejuvenation or for hair growth. And there's minimal downtime with it. So that's a natural way to stimulate your own collagen production. But the more anti-wrinkle injections you get, so if you're doing it for years, that's taking care of the deeper wrinkles. It tends to emphasize your fine lines and wrinkles, because obviously if you're paralyzing muscles in one place, other muscles have to start working. So then the lines under your eyes can become more apparent. So a combination of treatment actually gives you a better glow.
Mm. I think it's really important to find a doctor who's going to tell you the truth and be really honest with you about what you need or if you're going too far. Yeah. And do you think there is that honesty there?
Well, as I said, in our practice, we're all specially trained, you know, consultant dermatologists.
Yes.
So, you know, when people come in and they're asking, you know, what do I need? You really want to ask somebody what bothers you the most. Like there's you can't do everything at once. And again, as I said earlier, it's a work in progress. So you can't do every single treatment at the same time because skin takes time to recover in between. So if somebody wants their biggest bang for their buck, that is going to be an anti-wrinkle injection, because within 5 days you'll start to see the muscles relaxing, the wrinkles are going away, and at 14 days it has its maximal effect and you're going to get maybe 3 to 4 months out of that. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you're looking for, you know, if it's your jawline that's bothering you, you know, that doesn't happen where we give you a treatment and suddenly you wake up the next day and your jawline looks tighter. That is us trying to stimulate new collagen formation, and that doesn't happen overnight. So anything that's trying to stimulate new collagen or elastin formation takes at least 2 to 3 months. So we use old therapy for that, which is essentially a non-invasive facelift. It can be used on the jawline, the chin, the neck, the midface, the eyes. So for people who are afraid of knives and scalpels, which is understandable, and they don't want any downtime, they don't want to have to hide away for weeks at a time, then old therapy would be the treatment for that.
Yeah.
Essentially a facelift without a knife.
And you know, if people get like a kind of saggy neck, but their face is fine, is that the treatment then?
Yes. I mean, your age, it's so funny how, you know, we're all thinking about our faces, we concentrate on our face, but your hands and your neck are actually the biggest giveaway, because most of us are there at least moisturizing for decades. It might not be the best, or you might not have all used the best sunscreen, but we have protected our skin from UV to a certain extent, but we forget to bring it down onto our necks and we forget the backs of our hands. And that's actually the biggest giveaway. But yes, you can use oil therapy to tighten the skin around the neck as well. So it's a great treatment, as I said, with minimal downtime, only a couple of days. And again, you might have a little bit of redness, a little bit of bruising, but not so much that you can't actually leave the house, you know, so you can go out and it's fine.
Oh, great. I'm just going to just have a look at some of the Instagram questions that I didn't get into the podcast. So I got a lot of questions from mums with young daughters or young sons wondering when they should introduce a cleanser to their kids.
So I suppose the first time they start to see a shine or oil, you know, on the skin. So, and that's really variable. I mean, some children, that's, you know, 9 or 10. And then some children, it's only when they hit their teenage years, but it's very, very variable. But when you start to see oil build up, then that can lead to blackhead formation. And then once you get blackheads, you then have the ability, unfortunately, because we've all got bacteria on our skin, for those bacteria to get stuck down with that blackhead and give you the red spot or the pus bump or the whitehead. And then you've obviously developed acne. So it's to try and minimize that oil buildup to stop blackhead formation, because if you've no blackheads, and the proper word for them is comedones, that's why you'll see on makeup and things it'll say non-comedogenic, which means non-pore blocking, non-blackhead forming. If you've no blackheads, then you essentially can't get acne. You know, you can't get that acne that can scar you. So whatever age it is, it doesn't matter what age they are. If a mum or dad sees that they're getting shiny by the end of the day and oil formation, then they should start washing their face, going to bed at nighttime with a gentle cream cleanser.
Yeah.
And there's so many of them on the market. But start off with gentle stuff, not introducing scrubs and things like that. Because again, as we said earlier, you'll get that over drying and they won't like it because it feels a little bit harsh on the skin and they won't like that tight sensation. And then their sweat glands will start to produce more oil and then you get into that vicious cycle again.
Mm. And should you stay away from the kind of supermarket cleansers that are targeted to teenagers?
Yeah, I suppose my favorite brand when you're starting off with young children or teenagers is from La Roche-Posay. It's the Efficlar range specifically for acne, because it's suitable for teenagers who are not on any treatment, or they might be attending their GP for the first line treatment, or they may even be attending a dermatologist and having acne treatment as well. So that would be my favorite because it comes with a moisturizer. They have an SPF built in, particularly if they're on a prescription treatment, which is retinol based. mixed at nighttime. You want them to be using sunscreen in the morning as well. And they have the whole range that the face wash, the foaming face wash that the child can choose from. Mm-hmm. So then if you just give them a couple of things to as opposed to 10 different things, they're more likely to stick with that routine.
So when I send my Pia off to crash in the morning, she always has to have her SPF on before she goes in. But I often put on, you know, you get the big factor 50 in the chemist and I just put it all over her. But should I be using a different sunscreen for her face than her body?
I suppose it depends on how sensitive she is. Now, if you're using a children's sunscreen, and often you can see that because on the brand, it'll have like a little picture of children on the front of it. Mm-hmm. They tend to actually have less chemicals in it.
Okay.
So they are designed to be used all over. I'd only say if your child has very severe eczema or something, like it's really, really sensitive skin, that you might want to choose a facial sunscreen specifically for their face rather than just the overall body sunscreen. But if her skin is normal and she doesn't have any sensitivities, you can just use it all over.
Okay, yeah. Brilliant. And we often see on packets like paraben free, vegan friendly. Is that important?
It is important. So it depends what it says. Just for everyone listening, the word natural is so overused on mm-hmm. the front of packaging. And it's only when you turn around the back of the bottle that you see there's about 30 ingredients in there. So how could that be natural? So the less ingredients, obviously, the more closer it is to being natural. Often on the front of bottles, it'll say SLS free, paraben free, fragrance free. So SLS is sodium lauryl sulfate. It's essentially it's what makes soaps foam up, basically. So for people who have sensitive skin, they want to use SLS free because it means it'll be soap free. Parabens, again, are like preservatives that are added to products to give them a shelf life, but they can be very irritating on skin. So can alcohol, it can dry out your skin. And then all the added fragrances, the more we keep exposing our skin to fragrances, particularly you should avoid them altogether in small children because their skin is thinner as babies. So you don't want to overexpose them to things that can irritate their skin. So yes, if you can stay fragrance free, parabens free, you're much less likely to develop an allergy. That's why with the Biologique Research range, it's suitable for everyone because it doesn't have parabens and it doesn't have added fragrance. Mm-hmm. So if your product smells beautiful, which is great because we all love that nice smell, makes us feel good, the chances are if you've got sensitive skin, it's not really going to suit you. So you need to choose a more bland range that's suitable for you.
And should we be moisturising our body every single day?
Yes, it literally does. Everyone says to me, it takes so much time. It doesn't. I do it every single day. And I think the sooner you start with children, the easier it is, because you know what it's like. If your child's not used to having sunscreen put on mm-hmm. a moisturizer, you're like running after this toddler around the house. And it becomes like a nightmare to try and get the sunscreen on them. So if you start it very young, if you start with obviously baby massage when they're young, they think it's actually a relaxing thing. So if you start sooner, then it just becomes part of your normal routine. Everyone should moisturize every day, because as we age with each decade of life, we're losing our own natural oils. So you will certainly see a lot of older people developing dermatitis who never had it when they were a child. And that's a new entity in itself called dermatitis of the elderly, because we're all living longer mm-hmm. And we're just getting drier essentially. And then you've got the central heating in the winter times, and then we're all wrapped up with hats and scarf and things like that. So we're just drying our skin out. So certainly I would, if everyone has an extra 2 minutes, just moisturize, because that's all it takes.
And would you do that in the morning or the evening or whenever you have time?
I do it every morning after my shower, and then I would do it twice a day. If I was going for like a run or swimming or something later on, I would do it straight away again. So, and the same for my own little girl. I mean, like every time she has her shower, well, she's now 8, which is great because she can do it herself, but her moisturizer is there, and she only has specific brands that she likes because she's used to it since a child. And if I ran out, it's like nearly panic stations, because like she's no moisturizer to put on.
Wow.
So yeah,
what a great healthy habit to get into. Do you mind me asking which ones they are?
So when babies are born, their top layer of their skin is approximately 20% thinner, and if a baby is born prematurely, it can be even up to 30% thinner. So it takes months and months for that skin thicken up. So you really need to avoid, as we were already alluding to, parabens, fragrances, things that could dry out their skin and irritate it. So for my own little girl, I used Lipikar AP Plus, which means antipruritic or anti-itch, from La Roche-Posay, because it's licensed from birth. So they have a special bath additive that will moisturize them when they're in the bath, and then you pat the skin dry on your baby, and then you put a nice generous layer of moisturizer. And then, as I said, they get used to that every single time, so that when it comes to sunscreen time, it's like, oh, I'm just having my moisturizer put on, this is fine. And it relaxes them. Mm. I used to always do her bath before bedtime and then put on her moisturizer. As I said, it's like baby massage, last feed, and then sleeps through the night. It was great.
Great. Yeah. Brilliant routine to get into. Last question. I could sit here all day and just bombard you with questions. But you know when you get the little bumps on your skin and they'd often be at the top of your arms, at the top of your legs?
Yeah. So it's called keratosis pilaris. Yeah. And it's essentially just dryness. Like everyone gets it to a certain extent, but there is a genetic predisposition. So you will see in some families, some people have a more severe variant of it. And it can look quite red actually in some people. Some people refer to it as their chicken skin. But yeah, it's the tops of your thighs commonly and the backs of your arms that you will feel it. So you need to, in the shower, you need to use a wash without soap. So an emollient, a moisturizing shower wash. And you know the ball shaped loofahs, essentially, mm-hmm. get people to put that on and gently rub it in a circular motion, not scrubbing at it. They're never all going to go away, but gently do that on a regular basis and then use a moisturizer every single day. Now, the one that I would recommend the most is, and you can actually only get it online, is Ameliorate. It's in a turquoise bottle, and that has been for my patients the best products. There's lots of them out there. Any of them that have urea in it, because urea is designed to soften skin. So if your listeners are looking for a product, if it does have urea, that's designed to treat keratosis pilaris or dry skin. But Ameliorate is my favorite one and my patient's favorite one.
Great, because when I was actually in radiotherapy, I had to moisturize my chest every day, but I'd always just, do my whole body, and the difference in my skin when you moisturize every day.
Yep.
Now, it's a habit that I've kind of fallen out of. But I suppose when you go into lockdown and you've more time and things like that, you kind of pick up those habits again. But it really does pay off.
Yeah, no, it's definitely, and your fake tan will sit better as well if you moisturize regularly. So, and I'm all about the fake tan, obviously not a real tan.
Yeah. Thank you so much. My God, that was so much amazing information. I think the one thing I took from you today above anything else was the importance of mole mapping. And I'm definitely going to, it's an appointment I have been putting off for years. So I'm going to make that appointment. I hope other people will too. And where can we find you?
So we're based at the Institute of Dermatologists. It's at 10 Pembroke Place in Bullsbridge. So it's a really big glass building at the back of the Harbour Park Hotel. So very central.
And are you on Instagram? Because I know that you do lots of things. You were on an Instagram live at Millie McIntosh last week and you're always popping up. So I suppose people could follow you.
Yeah. So I mean, IDI, which is the Institute of Dermatologists, is on Instagram. So people will be well able to get, contact numbers and the website and email from there. And we also post things. So we, if it's, Melanoma Awareness Month in May, we'll also post very, very regularly different treatments that people might need, or, talk about acne or maskne and things like that. So it's a good one to have because we put tips up on it regularly. But they can find us at the Institute of Dermatologists. And obviously each of the dermatologists there will have their own section that if you have a specific need, that you could go to that person directly.
Oh, brilliant. Thank you so much, Dr. Nikki. I've learned so much today. Thanks a million for your time.
Thanks a million for having me.
Thanks for listening to The Good Glow Health with thanks to Emma. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a rating and a review. It would really mean the world. And if you'd like to send me a message about any topics you'd like me to cover, please do so on Instagram at georgie.crawford. Talk to you very soon.